Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello everyone, Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. My name is Peter Mingles. We started this whole thing a long time ago. I guess it's towards the tail end of 2012, beginning part of 2013. And I wanted Building Fortunes Radio to have or be a platform where we can talk about different and various things relative to home-based businesses, MLM, affiliate programs, or whatever might happen sometime in that future. Well, I was, as many people know, for those that listen to the other Building Fortunes Radio shows, I'm an entrepreneur, a home-based business evangelist, if you will, and I like MLM. But one of the things that I realized is that MLM, when done right, is done right, and MLM, when done wrong, is done wrong, and parts of this industry are things that I wanted to change. And I spent a lot of time trying to change the industry from the inside, and that's almost impossible with the people that are the problem. We'll talk about that maybe as we go through this radio show. But one of the things that I did was I was watching a website called SeekingAlpha.com, and they are a website that posts a lot of opinions on publicly traded companies. And Herbalife is a publicly traded company, and at that time, Bill Ackman was really going after Herbalife to try to shut it down. And at that same time, Vima, run by BK Barreco, had a temporary restraining order, and even though it wasn't publicly traded, a lot of people were talking about the MLM business model relative to both companies. One of those people is still Roger Van Vlissingen, and Roger is spelled R-O-G-I-E-R. So Roger is a gentleman that at that time lived in New York. I'm not sure if he still does. But he was writing something super-duper smart about Herbalife and MLM and things along that line, and he was making some very educated comments. And I said, you know, these are really good. This guy's a sharp dude. Maybe he could be on our radio show. So I invited him. He brought a guest, a gentleman named E. Robert Smith, equally good guy, and we did a radio show or two. And right after the first radio show, Scott Johnson called me up, and I didn't know who Scott Johnson was. It was Labor Day, so about 7 or 8 years ago. I think it was 2015, so whatever that is. So on Labor Day, Scott had called me up, and he said, listen, I listened to that radio show, but there's something that a lot of you guys miss out on, or this was missing in the conversation about MLM and some of the criticism. And I asked Scott, what is that? And he said, the tools scam. And I know there's some brand new listeners all the time listening to Building Fortunes Radio. So I thought I had an idea of what Scott Johnson might have been thinking about when he was talking about the tool scam. And by the way, Scott, we're getting like a really super-duper thunderstorm in the background. We're over here in Florida, and that sometimes happens. So if I go away, I'll come back. Because sometimes the electricity pops, computers go out, and my internet connection might drop, my phone connection might drop as well. So I'll call back in. So you can continue. I just let me tell you that because I could hear it in the background. So anyway, so back to my story. When I asked Scott, I said, you know, or when Scott said something about the tool scam, I was like, you know, I've never spoken to Scott before. I don't really know what he means by the tool scam, but since I had previously been associated with Amway, I literally quit Amway 3 separate times based 100% on not the overpriced products, not the crappy compensation plan, not even the cult-like nature of the uplines. I quit because they were just so focused on having me go to meetings and the BS that was associated with, you know, this could be the one that really turns your career around. And by the way, I didn't have to worry about a career being turned around because they had just started. But they were constantly pushing those people, you know, you got to go to the meetings and you can never miss a function and always be super loyal. And they used words like 99% loyal is 100% disloyal. And I'm like, what are you people talking about? I understand the nature of loyalty, but I quit 3 separate times. So when I was having the conversation with Scott, I said, you know, Scott, do you have a website? And he said, I do. It's called stopTheAmwayToolScam.wordpress.com. And that's when I realized that he was talking about the same thing that I was talking about. We used to call it the system. Scott calls it tools. They're kind of like the same thing, interchangeable words, if you will. So we started doing radio shows. And as a result of that, I said, you know, Scott, you know, I don't know how much we'll be able to talk about tools by itself because everything is going to get old eventually. But we've been doing this radio show for this long because we talk about a whole bunch of other things as well. One of the things that we've spoken about is the cult-like nature. So we're going to talk about maybe some of that as well on this radio show. We've spoken about everything from the FTC, the SEC. Sometimes we sprinkle in the FDA. We've spoken about Scientology. We've spoken about, of course, Amway about a million times. We'll talk about that a little bit today as well. We've had different guests on our radio show. We've done some of our radio shows ourselves, and tonight we're going to do a radio show ourselves. There's a lot of really great information out there that we can use for some examples. But the one thing that I do want to remind you is that if you want to hear these radio shows again, you can go to buildingfortunesradio.com/Scott-Johnson and be able to hear this as well as the previous radio shows, as well as Scott's website, which he has a host of really cool things on his website as well. So having said that, Scott Johnson, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Hey, Peter, thanks for having me. And I just happened to pull up FlaglerBeach.tv, which is the website that has several views in it, including the Critter Cam, which is your backyard. And it's really kind of a surreal image this evening. I don't know if you did something different to your camera. It's just the lighting in the sky, but it's really crystal clear. It's black and white, and the deer just happened to have walked off to the left, but there's a raccoon enjoying whatever's in your lawn. So I just wanted to let you know that, and it's just kind of a cool scene. I don't think I've seen this portrayal, if you will, this presentation. Usually it's either in color or it's you know, the night vision thing, and this is somewhere in between. It's really cool. So did you do anything different to the camera?
No, it probably is exactly what you said. You caught it exactly the right time. Between when it's flipping on and off between night vision and regular vision, and the sun hits it just right, and maybe there's a little bit of the sun in the right angle, you'll be able to see that. And for those people that are wondering, if you go to FlaglerBeach.tv, you'll be able to see the beach where a killer whale showed up. Dead this year, which we never had those before. But you'll see the pier is actually broken off through one of the last hurricanes from last year, and this is where we kind of raised our kids. I had a couple of beach houses over in Flagler Beach, you know, the broke businessman that we are, Scott. You know, sometimes we get a chance to have beach houses as well. So I had a beach house or two. So we've had those. I rented them, of course, because home-based businesses. And as a result of that, you can see the little Flagler Pier over there. And if you scroll down, you'll see the pier camera, where you'll actually get a better picture of the pier that was broken off, and lots of people used to fish over there. And then depending on whether you're using a PC or a phone, you can click on the Critter Cam, and then you'll be able to see that Critter Cam, which is what you're referencing right over here. And we got the deer, the raccoon, we have a whole bunch of other stuff, and cool midnight, cool skies. And if the thunderstorms are coming through, it's really kind of cool. So it's a live camera right in my backyard. So there we go, Scott. So over to you. I'll take a look.
Yeah, it's cool. And the raccoon just ran off towards the back there along the trail. I guess there was another raccoon way back in the backyard, and they both ran off. But I didn't see what startled them. So maybe they'll come into camera view here. Maybe not. Who knows? But anyway, just going back to what you were talking about, the tools and the system are terms that are used pretty much interchangeably. In my mind, the system includes some of the aspects of activity as well as the physical tools, you know. And when we say tools, we're talking about tickets for meetings, books, phone apps, recordings, excuse me, website access, voicemail. These are all tools. And then there's certain activities, certain patterns, if you will, that are described as far as how to go about, you know, quote unquote, doing Amway. And that would be something that's not necessarily a tool, but it is part of a system. You know, also things like, hey, you should consult with your upline, you know, whatever periodicity the group recommends, and those kinds of things. So all of that would be included in, you know, what I would consider the system, and then the tools are kind of a subset of that. And the tools are where they make their money. Let's, you know, let's be real clear on that. And they make a lot of money. And I have this documented on my websites that you mentioned one of them. And I've got three websites, and I've got a YouTube channel, the link to this radio show, my email, it's all there. You know, feel free to contact me if you would like to discuss anything about MLMs. So if you go to facebook.com/ Scott Tex Johnson, ScottTexJohnson, and that's all one word, of course, and that's how you can see this information. Looks like the raccoons are starting to wander back.
And that is a cool picture. That picture looks like this is what the world is going to look like when it's over. Like, that is a cool picture.
It is unique. Yeah, I have not quite seen this representation before. It must just be the light and cloud combination. At least one raccoon is coming back to eat. That's kind of an overview of what's going on with the system and the tools. Probably the most prominent example, because they don't talk about this when you're in, right? When you're in Amway, they don't talk about the tool profit. They make it sound as if all of their material success came from Amway. And in reality, particularly the Emeralds and above, most of their profit actually comes from the tools. And there's a guy by the name of Brig Hart who was kicked out back in the early 2000s, I think it was. And he had just a massive business. He was not in my upline, but he was well known across, you know, the Amway lines of sponsorship. I think he was a double diamond. And he was actually up in your neck of the woods. He was, I think, from Jacksonville or somewhere near there. And he was a surfer dude, and he was a dope head. And when he tells his story, he goes, oh, yeah, I was, you know, kind of messed up, and now I'm this multimillionaire. You know, look at me. It's the typical rags to riches or maybe joint to riches story that you hear on stage, you know, with the message, of course, the subliminal message. It's actually pretty obvious. You know, if this guy can do it, you know, why can't you do it? That's kind of what's being portrayed, and it's being portrayed by many, many people that come in and do the guest speaking to get people fired up. And it is definitely, you know, something to get you motivated. Now, when you realize that they're lying through their teeth, because most of their profits coming from the tools, and also they're running an illegal pyramid, because very little of the products are being sold to customers. And let's define customers here. That's people who are not part of the MLM compensation plan. That's what a customer is. Distributors, or they call them IBOs now in Amway, those are not customers. Those are distributors, and that is internal consumption. That is not external retail sales. And those things get mixed up intentionally by the MLMs, the DSA, right, the Direct Selling Association, which is their lobbyist in Washington, D.C., and they love to just confuse with different terms having different meanings. In fact, one of the things that I heard recently from an anti-MLM hun was that 1% of direct sales are done in the United States compared to the overall, you know, non-MLM retail sales. And I think the hun that was mentioning this doesn't understand that when this statement was made, it was made in the context that direct sales includes both the direct selling companies and the MLM companies together. Together, they are 1% of the retail, not just the direct selling companies, but the direct selling and the MLM together. And again, definitions, they're important, right? So an MLM is where there's upline and downline, right? You sponsor people, you recruit them, different terms. And in direct sales, each individual is connected directly to the company, so there is no upline or downline, very much like the Electrolux company that you were involved in for years. There's no upline or downline. Now, you might have someone going out, particularly with a new person, to help train them and make sure that they do things right and so on and so forth. And that trainer gets a cut of the commission, and there's no problem with that because they're putting in their time and effort and lending their experience and expertise. So there's no problem with that. But again, that's direct selling. That's not an MLM. And I know that Electrolux, I think towards the end of your stay with them, started an MLM model where there was an upline and downline, but for most of their years, they were just a direct selling company. Is that accurate? Am I pretty much saying?
Well, actually, it wasn't towards the tail end. It was when I was still a salesman and assistant manager, they came out, and actually a branch manager, they came out with something called Superlink, and it was an additional several layers of compensation added to the direct sales compensation. So it went, I think it was 743211. I don't know if that adds up to 14, but it was an additional 14% added to the commission structure. So if what it basically did was gave every person in my office the incentive to build a team, and they could recruit. They would bring them into the office. We would train them. And I'll just use your name, Scott. So if you were part of my sales team and you sponsored someone, let's call him Scott number two, then you would get paid 7% of whatever that person did. And if Scott number two sponsored Scott number three, that person got 7, you got 4. So it went down those levels, 7, 4, 3, 2, 1, 1, and 1, I believe it was. And the reality was, it was a great concept. It was one of the reasons why I got promoted, because I built my branch by doing it the right way. We had a lot of people recruit a lot of people, and they would bring them in for our training, and we would train them. Many of them were just part-time. They didn't have to buy to be able to be part of the gig or anything else like that. But the reality was is that what direct salespeople always figure out how to do, especially in New York or the East Coast, is how to screw the company. Maximize the compensation plan equals screw the company. So they would take a sale, put it under 6 levels down, and basically the company was paying out 14 additional percentage on the same sales. So, you know, it's almost like a, what is the name, Chicago guy, Rahm Emanuel. Never let a good crisis go to waste. So they would never let a good sale go uncompensated to the max. So they would take a sale, like if I was in the field, I would go make a sale, put it under somebody on the very bottom, and everybody above that would get their commissions and just kind of figure out however we do it, because that's what direct salespeople do. So the company eventually said, wait a minute, we're really not getting any net gain in sales. So they discontinued it. The good thing for me is I was promoted already, became an area vice president. So when it went away, it didn't hurt me because I was already an area VP. But it did kind of hurt the potential of the company, but the direct sales company screwed it up. So that would be an MLM, for my definition, done wrong inside that own company, and they discontinued that concept. Nobody will ever read about Superlink because it was before the internet. But that was the way that it went. And like I said, it went done the right way. Got me promoted. You know, we had more sales than anybody else in the country for many months in a row. That's one of the reasons why we did it. And two customers, we didn't do like, it wasn't like people would open up a satellite branch and have to buy equipment to be part of it like a franchise. So there was none of the downside inventory loading. It was just that, you know, the sales guys knew how to screw the compensation plan. And by the way, just so you know, and we're going to talk a little bit about this as we go, compensation plan manipulation is almost inherent with direct sales. So it's kind of like if you don't understand compensation manipulation, then you don't understand direct sales. It's going to happen no matter what, and you have to put the safeguards in there, and you have to learn how to inspect what you expect, which is going to lead me to one important point. When I was an area VP, I would train our auditors, and when I was training our auditors, because it came from the field, I knew all the different ways to screw the compensation. So I let my managers know, I know all the ways to screw the compensation because I was trained by the best of them. Like, literally, I was trained by the best of them how to do it. And I won't mention the specific example, but there are a few times where I was asked to do something I normally wouldn't do. And the first time I did it, it wasn't bad. So I'll explain what I did. But it wasn't bad. But I felt bad for doing it. And I just said, you know, that's not the way to – this is not the reason why I'm here. And I don't want to do things like this to be able to get ahead. And I don't, you know, miss the contest as opposed to whatever. And what I was asked to do is buy 5 machines. And by the way, we used to finance our own machines, so it was real easy for me to approve 5 fake sales. So I was told to basically fabricate 5 sales for this month, and I could always cancel it or sell them the next month, and no one was really hurt except for my upper manager would win his commissions or win his title or his convention, whatever the scenario would be. And I remember specifically, I was a young guy at the time, and I said, but that's not company policy, and I can get fired for that. And I did it anyway because I didn't know how to say no. And it was kind of intimidating because it was somebody that I respected that asked me to do that. And I never really liked having to do that. So I said, I don't want to do that stuff. But for anybody that's in direct sales management, compensation manipulation is part of the game. And a lot of people don't know that. So I'll use one example, kind of exposing myself one more time. I'll never forget my second month in the business. I wanted to be a rookie of the month. It was only my second full month. And I knew that if I had 50 sales, I would be promoted to an assistant manager. They could not promote me. So at the last day of the month, I had 48 sales. And I went out and I wound up selling 2 or 3 more that Sunday. So I made it. Like, I made it. But we were always taught never hit a contest exactly. Always give yourself an extra cushion just in case somebody cancels at the last minute and you have to give them their money back. So I wound up buying 2 for myself as a buffer. Now, I bought 2 for myself, partly because, number one, the machines were on sale. Number two, I was brand new and I wanted one anyway. And number three, the prices were going up so I could always resell it. But I kind of bought myself my cushion. So there's always that compensation manipulation that is expected in direct sales for contests or bonuses sometimes, things like that. The FTC, fuck off. I'm just telling you, FTC, go fuck yourself. If you think that's illegal, that's just the way things go. You know, SEC, FTC, you know, whoever. I mean, that's just the way direct sales is. Get a fucking job. Like, go fucking figure it out. I didn't do anything illegal. I bought one for myself. I wound up buying another one because of whatever. I hit the contest. Anybody who's going to complain should have been the company. But we always realize that you need to let your people hit those bonuses for them to be able to stay. And this is a mature conversation that idiots don't understand. But the reality was, is, yeah, Superlink was our MLM compensation plan. It was fucked up by the direct sales force, so the company discontinued it, which was a big mistake. But I understand why they had to do it. We should have got rid of the criminals that actually fucked up the compensation instead of getting rid of the program, because it got me promoted and I did it the right way. So the reality was is that that was that. But the reason why I gave you my little story about compensation plans and manipulation is going to tie in a little bit later on in some of the stories we're going to talk about in the next hour or so, Scott. So back to you.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Peter, because when I was in Amway, you know, we had a monthly campaign, you know, towards the end of the month, because the bonuses were, you know, factored in, calculated from beginning to end of month. We were taught to look at all of our downline, and you start at the bottom. So if there's someone down at the bottom that had maybe, you know, 70 or 80 or 90 PV, then we would call them up and say, hey, look, you know, if you just buy 10 or 20 PV more of products, then you can get your 100 PV, which gets you your 3% bonus. And since you've already spent money to get to 70 or 80 or 90 PV, and you're not going to get anything back from it, at least buy a little bit more, and then you can reach your 100 and make your 3% bonus. So that was just the logical, you know, presentation to do that. Well, the people that did that would then cause the layer above them to get closer to their next level of bonus, right? Because there was multiple levels of bonus going all the way up to the direct level. And by the way, there's another MLM hunt out there that has no idea what a direct is. So let me just take a quick detour here. A direct in Amway is now called Platinum, and it's a 75 PV of volume, which in today's dollars, you multiply it by either 3 or 4. With inflation, I think it's probably 4 now to come up with a dollar figure that you need. And all of that cannot be in one leg. It has to be split amongst at least two legs. One of the smaller leg has to be at least 2,500 of the 7,500, because you don't want somebody to you know, recruit one person and that person goes crazy, and the person that just did that one recruit gets really wealthy. That's not fair, and it just wouldn't work mathematically as far as the bonus payout. So anyway, it would just go up a layer at a time to where each layer as you go up is now closer to their next level of increase of bonus. And that way, overall, the entire organization volume grew sometimes significantly at the end of the month. So, yeah, that's just how it works. And I don't think there's anything illegal with that either. You know, the things that we harp on is the retail sales. You know, if you're just buying products for yourself to make a goal and you don't have the retail sales to back it up, because that extra 10 or 20 PV could be a retail sale also. Now, it generally was not, because the products are overpriced and it's very difficult to sell them. But theoretically, they could be. But again, if you don't have the retail sales to go along with that personal consumption, then you're an illegal pyramid. And that's the bottom line. So, yeah, that kind of thing went on a monthly basis at Amway. So I picked up on a couple other.
It's almost part of the culture. So that's the stretch bonuses. That's the stretch, you know. When it's done the right way,
right,
it's fine. Now, let me tell you, when it's done the wrong way is when you max out your credit cards every month because you need to hit a PIN level. So that's MLM done wrong. So if anybody's looking for an explanation, what does MLM done wrong look like? It's when you do that over and over and over again to keep a PIN level, and you put yourself into debt, and then you wind up being over, you know, then you wind up inventory loading or something worse than that as a result of your inability to be able to grow your business. So if it's a stretch, then it's okay. If it's a qualifier for inventory loading purposes, just to keep your ego together or for whatever reason, then that becomes predatory. And when it's done over and over and over every month, that's when it becomes really bad. So we know the difference between, you know, the right way to do things, the wrong way to do things, stretch goals, and then inventory loading. But there's a lot of people that, unfortunately, because of their ego and, you know, the need to keep a title, that wound up putting themselves in really bad financial positions because they can rationalize putting their bonuses on a credit card, and then they're stuck with a whole bunch of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, when it's a pattern, when it's habitual, then it becomes a problem. When it's a once in a while thing, and, you know, it's not a huge stretch, it's just a little bit, then that's really not an issue. So there are lots of shades of color there, you know, between something that's fine and something that's definitely not fine. And that's what we, you know, when we talk about MLM done right, that's what we're talking about. But it boils down to retail sales, you know, both from an individual perspective and the company overall. If you don't have at least half of your products or services going to customers, then you're an illegal pyramid. Now, that's not a law, but that's where the FTC has settled with FEMA and Herbalife back in 2016. So it's a good guideline. And I hope that the FTC, you know, puts that across the entire industry. I asked for that last year, last May, when I submitted my comments for the product and earnings claims request for input, that they make that a standard across the industry, that all the MLMs need to understand that that is the definition of an illegal pyramid, you know, whether it's 50-50 or maybe the FTC might say, no, you got to sell at least twice as much as you consume internally, or three times. I don't really care what the number is. But again, we have precedent in these settlements, which places emphasis on that. Now, when you were talking about, you know, putting those sales at the bottom, it kind of reminded me of Orrin Woodward, who was booted in 2007, or he quit. There's controversy over that, but he's gone. But one of the things that Amway had a problem with him was something called stacking. And this is where, you know, you have an organization, and every time that you find a new prospect, you put him at the very bottom. No matter who found him in the organization, you put him at the very bottom of a leg. And it almost starts to look, you know, like a binary type situation. You know, when you keep putting people down in depth and you kind of neglect the width, that's kind of how binary works. And,
so
and
use,
of course,
to use my Electrolux analogy, that's what they were doing. They were stacking, but they were doing it, you know, in the most egregious way most of the times. Instead of stacking two levels down, they were stacking six.
Yeah, but now when you say stacking, were you stacking distributors or stacking retail sales?
They were stacking the sale. So, like, for instance, if you had a structure, like Scott number one sponsored Scott number two, sponsored Scott number three, sponsored Scott number four, and then all of a sudden what you would do is you'd put – and by the way, it didn't cost any money to be in Electrolux. So what they would do was then you would put a sale under Scott number six, and everybody upline would get paid, even if it was just a little bit. Now, I shouldn't say that, and I don't want to distract this portion of the conversation, but I said it didn't cost any money to get started. What the company used to do is they used to charge $135 for what they call a success kit, and it was a little plastic box that we use for tools for demonstrating the vacuum cleaners. But we were told, this is what we were told, it was also used not only for the success kit, because the success kit didn't cost $135. It was also used to self-insure the company, which may have been mostly correct. So we were self-insured. So there's a lot of businesses that have a startup cost associated with that. Electrolux was one of them. And it wasn't, there was no commissions paid on the success kit. But, you know, lots of businesses have startup fees, including, if you will, and I'm not really sure about the accuracy of what I'm going to say next, but even like fast food places like McDonald's, I think you have to buy your own uniform. I've never worked at McDonald's before, but I think my kids did, and I think they needed to buy a uniform. And it's not like you could do anything else with the uniform when you're done with it. I mean, it's a McDonald's uniform. So I think there's lots of places where you have to start with buying something just to get started. And even if it wasn't McDonald's, there's a lot of people that if you're starting at a real job or another job, you have to buy your clothes. So there's lots of either direct or indirect costs associated with starting a job or a business. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, that's pretty common in the restaurant. You know, especially the, you know, places like McDonald's, you do pay for your own uniform, you know, because all the anti-MLM huns make a big deal. Oh, it costs me money to join. Well, guess what, kids? That's how it is in a lot of places that are not MLM. So, you know, start focusing on the real problems, lack of retail sales and tool scams, and forget about trying these other arguments because they just don't hold water. They don't go anywhere. They don't differentiate an MLM from non-MLM businesses. And just to get back to the orange stacking thing, in that case, it was the distributor that was being stacked. It was not a retail sale that was being credited right to the person lowest in the totem pole. It was a distributor. Now, the upside of that, like you mentioned, is when that person bought something, then everybody up that chain benefited from that volume. And so it kept all those people all the way up the chain motivated to stay in, right, because they just got a new person under them. And when you have a long vertical chain like that and you start adding new people at the bottom, that really motivates everybody above them, maybe even people that are not active, and they go, wow, I'm kind of moving up here, you know, but I can only go so far unless I get another leg started so that I can have some side volume to really tap into the bonus money. So, you know, it's kind of a good technique, but I think Warren took it to the extreme, and Amway had a problem with that, although I think part of what Amway was doing was sort of making up a problem. Now, he was doing it, but I think Amway was kind of making up a problem to divert the attention away from the questions he was asking. And he had been asking these questions for years, apparently. And the questions were basically, hey, Amway, how come your products are so expensive? How do you expect me and my downline to sell these things to customers so that we're not an illegal pyramid if the prices are so high? And can't you do something? And I think that was the main reason that Amway kicked them out. But then the stacking was more of a distraction, and, you know, Amway tried to use it as the real reason. And it really, I don't believe, was the real reason. But that kind of, you know, manipulation goes on both by the distributors and the companies from time to time. And before I move too far, I wanted to also describe the fact that in most MLMs, you know, it's just lotions and potions. There's no particular training involved. Everyone brushes their teeth. Everyone uses deodorant. Well, I don't know if everyone does, but most people use deodorant and all these things. So there's no real training required in most MLMs. You know, everyone knows how to shampoo their hair and all these kinds of things. But when it comes to vacuums and it comes to things like insurance, then there's a lot more training involved, a lot more knowledge in order to be able to sell those products. In fact, in insurance, you even have to get licensed because it's a state requirement. I believe all 50 states require insurance agents to go through a, you know, state program and become licensed, in other words, knowledgeable in the insurance industry before they're allowed to sell insurance. And so it's a much higher bar, right? There's much more required of the individual in those scenarios to be able to participate in selling the products. And that's why I believe, you know, when people say, oh, you can't name an MLM that's doing it right. Well, the insurance companies, I believe, and I've said this before, I haven't seen their books, so I can't make a declarative statement here, but I believe because of the higher bar that you have to go through and the fact that most people do not want to become insurance agents, and there's a lot more people that are willing to buy insurance if they're given, like you said, you know, the proper information so they can understand how it benefits them. And so I think these insurance companies, by and large, have a lot more retail sales to customers than they do internal consumption of the insurance, and therefore they are not illegal pyramids. So there you go. You know, chew on that for a little bit, all you anti-MLM huns who say we can't name a single MLM. But again, I have to, you know, have a, you know, kind of a note there to say, hey, look, I haven't seen their books. There's rampant lying in MLM industry, so I can't say for sure, but I believe that most of these insurance MLMs in particular are not illegal pyramids. Now, they could be doing other things wrong, but as far as having those retail sales, which is the definition of an MLM, you know, being legitimate or not, I think I think they're legitimate from a illegal pyramid point of view. Now we know that, you know, there's a insurance company up in Canada right now being investigated for, you know, different things like promoting the wrong type of insurance to people and other things that are going on. But that's not an illegal pyramid. That's just giving bad advice, and that's probably, you know, violating their state license conditions to promote the proper insurance to a person depending on their financial circumstances. That's part of licensing, so that you understand the different insurance products and you know which ones to promote to different situations. So anyway, I guess that's it for our intro. It was kind of a long one, but it was a good one. We covered a lot of ground. Did you have something you wanted to start with? Did you want to do something? Behind the NOM? Go ahead.
It transitions into that one article that we were going to talk about, the one that we were talking about with the isogenics thing. So that's one of the reasons why we had a little bit of a longer intro. So if you want to bring that one up, you can. Or, you know, do an intro however you want to, and that'll be one of the first ones we talk about.
Yeah, let me start at the top of the page so I don't get lost. But we'll get to that one really quick because it is near the top. So I'm looking at behindmlm.com, and these guys do a great job of finding and following all these different situations. A lot of them are MLMs. A lot of them are Ponzi's and particularly crypto related, and there's a lot of them. We don't cover nearly all of them on this show because there's just way too many of them. Most of them are gone before you hardly know they exist, and they're pretty small, and they're also pretty similar. So, you know, it doesn't make much sense to me to cover all of these little scams on this show. Just be aware there's a lot of them out there. And this website does a really good job. You know, if you want to look up a company name or particularly a person's name to see how many scams they may have been involved in the past, because these guys have been around for, I think, 15 years or so. So they have quite a, you know, backlog of information and a good search engine. You know, in the upper right-hand corner, the little magnifying glass, you can put in somebody's name and all the articles that have that name in them will pop up, and you can do some research if you're willing to read. You know, a lot of these anti-MLM huns are too stupid to read, and all they do is see a headline and they start, you know, flapping their gums together, and out comes garbage. So we don't do that here. We actually stick to the facts and do deep research. So the first one I'll just get started with, Peter, is kind of a new one. I think it was not here earlier today, but it's here now. And the headline is from June 22nd, 2023. And the headline is Jan Gregory issues death threat against Behind MLM's Oz. So Oz is the author of this website. This Jan Gregory is this serial scammer. And apparently he gave a pretty definitive death threat to Oz, which I think is probably actionable by law enforcement. Now, Oz lives in Taiwan, so I don't know, you know, if he's contacted the Taiwanese law enforcement or somebody else, because this guy, Jan Gregory, apparently was in Canada for a while, and then he moved to Dubai. And of course, Dubai is known as a safe haven. They don't have any extradition treaties with any other countries. So when you get in trouble and you have some money in your pocket, go to Dubai because you're safe there. You just can't leave. So, you know, it's like the old song, you can check in, but you can never leave, right? So I don't know how serious this is. You know, it might just be an empty threat, but a threat is a threat, and it is actionable. Although this Jan Gregor is probably safe in Dubai as far as, you know, being sought by law enforcement. So it's probably an empty threat, although part of this story also goes into the fact that this Jan Gregory guy has been involved in all kinds of other, you know, like Ponzi schemes and cryptocurrency scams, and has a lot of connections with the Russian mafia, allegedly. And those guys, as you know, can reach out and touch somebody. So I don't think it's a totally empty threat, and we don't know how serious of a threat it is. But there is a picture of this guy at a shooting range with a pistol saying he's getting ready for a face-to-face meeting with Oz, you know, while he's shooting at a target. So, you know, to me, that's a very blatant threat that, you know, if this had been in the United States, it would definitely be actionable. Now, whether law enforcement would actually act on it, we don't know, because you just don't know. Things like this happen all the time. Sometimes they're followed up, sometimes they're not. So who knows? But anyway, I'll let you make any comments further on that story.
Yeah, no one really knows who Oz is. So no one knows if Oz is a guy or a girl, it or he or whatever pronoun you want to use, lives in Thailand, I think you said. I know it's one of those. But he's got a lot of people that are his quote-unquote reporters. So between Oz and a lot of other people, they really do unearth a lot of stuff about some, you know, some of these schemes, or some of them. And they have a negative bent on it, like there's no such thing as a good MLM to a lot of these people. And sometimes they uncover and do a good job of identifying people that deserve to be uncovered. And I don't know anything about this Jan Gregory guy, but I know that, you know, they've highlighted Phil Piccolo, you know, and other people like that. Certainly the OneCoin issue, which is popping up all over again every once in a while. So they do provide a service. And unfortunately, I've been on the wrong side of Oz's commentary sometimes as well, because, you know, some of their research is not very good. But the reality is that I don't know if it's a guy, I don't know if it's a girl. We do know it's probably a person. And so far, no one has uncovered it. And I won't mention anything, but I did speak to, I have some lawyer friends, and one of them said that Oz is a girl. So, and they met with Oz because they were suing her into oblivion. So I don't know. So whether that was a story as well, I'm not really sure. But we don't know whether Oz is a boy or a girl. But we do know that they do a lot of good research, and they are definitely an anti-MLM website. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, they do. They do dig up a lot of facts. We don't always agree with their analysis. You know, some of their conclusions and some of their language is very assuming, I guess you could say. You know, where when they see some information, they come to an automatic conclusion before it's really been hashed out with all the facts. So that's some of the issues we've had with Oz over the years. That's interesting, though. I never heard that it might be a woman. I always assumed Oz was a guy, and I think there's a second person that works on this website with him or her, you know, to keep it going. And I thought I had seen something about, I can't remember what it was, that was not a picture of him, so to speak, but like him riding on a bicycle at a distance. You know, you couldn't see a face or anything. But that's interesting. Maybe it's a woman. Who knows? Maybe it used to be a guy, and now it's a woman, right? That's
you
how
know,
we
you
live
never know.
Now.
Could be. But it's probably for Oz's benefit, it is good that he's anonymous or she's anonymous, because they would probably be dead by now. They've been pissing off enough people at very, really high ranks and very connected organizations, corrupt ones as well. And Oz wouldn't be around if he was publicly or she was publicly available for easy comment. So I'm sure people know who he is, and the lawyers do, because they can find out anything. But for regular lay people, Oz is still a mystery. So back to you.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, the next story is the one that you mentioned earlier. And there's a couple others in there, but we won't cover those. So it's a June 23rd. Oh, that's interesting. I think he's got the date wrong on the...
He keeps the death threat one posted, pinned up on top.
Oh, he's got it pinned. Yeah. Yep, okay, that's it. Yeah, and I would pin it too if I was him. So the next one is June 23rd, so it's a little bit out of order, but to your point, he pinned it at the top. That's why it was And actually, there's a June 24th one on here, too. I guess it is June 24th here, too. Sometimes we'll see the next day. And again, it's because he's in Taiwan. Sometimes it's the next day there when he posts it, and it looks like, you know, it's impossible. But that's the way the world works. So the headline is Jay Bennett sues Isagenics over, quote, the false MLM promise, unquote. That's the headline. So this is really an interesting article, and we were discussing it very briefly before the show. So this guy, Jay Bennett, apparently he's been with Isagenics for a long time, made a lot of money, has a big group apparently, and all of a sudden Isagenics just cut his knees out from under him. They just said, hey, you're fired, you know, the old Trump line. And there wasn't apparently a real good reason for firing this guy. And so he sued him, and he said, you know, I need money. You know, they took away my livelihood. And Isagenics pushed back and said, well, Judge, there's more to the story than meets the eye. And you were talking to me about it briefly and before the show, and I finished reading the article, or at least skimming it pretty well. And this guy, I think we talked about him before, about 3 years ago. He claims, now we don't know which story is true, he claims that he worked with Isagenics to sell Isagenics products on Amazon and YouTube, I think it was. And this was a deal, according to him, that he made with the corporation. And the corporation said, no, there was never a deal. And there was lawsuits, I think, in both directions. And they ended up settling. And so we don't know who was telling the truth. We don't know if the company and him were together on it or he did it on his own. And then the company found out. You know, and he broke the company rules because most MLMs you're not allowed to sell online. And one of the major reasons is because now it used to be, you know, in the pre-internet days, it used to be said, and I think there's some validity to this reasoning, is particularly in Amway, they said, we don't want someone that is well-funded to be able to go advertise, you know, in newspapers, TV, radio, or whatever, and have an advantage over those that don't have that kind of financial wherewithal. And so we want to make it a level playing field. So no selling on, you know, TV, radio, newspaper, whatever, magazines. It has to be person to person. And I do think there's some validity to that. Now, in the internet age, it's pretty much free. And so that argument really doesn't hold up quite as well. But I think the other reason, and I think it's the major reason now, that they don't want people selling online is because they will sell the products for much, much less than others are selling them for various reasons. You know, one is to get rid of excess inventory that they built up and they're trying to sell it before it expires. Or maybe they quit and they're just trying to get rid of it. But for various reasons, if you have someone out there, and another reason they could sell it for less, particularly in Amway, you know, as you move up the ranks, you get a bigger bonus the more volume you have under you. So you can actually still make a little bit of money or at least break even on a product if you're near the top of the bonus chart than someone that's at the bottom of the bonus chart. So you have a built-in advantage in your pricing. And I think that, you know, Amway doesn't want to give people that advantage either, you know, depending on their position within the company. But the real bottom line reason is all these MLMs don't want people to know what the real value of the product is. If they allowed it to be sold on Amazon or YouTube, or not YouTube, Amazon and what's the other big one? I just lost it. Anyway, online stores.
They
don't want
you
to do it. eBay. Yeah, eBay. They don't want you to do it because then that shows the market that the product really isn't as worth as much as the distributors are trying to sell it for, the ones that are following the rules, right? The ones that are following the rules that are doing it person to person cannot sell it for that little bit of money. And so it just really changes the whole dynamic as far as, you know, what is this product really worth? Because if a distributor offers it for a higher amount of money and someone goes to eBay or Amazon and finds it for a lot less, well, if they're only a customer, you know, they're not interested in being a distributor themselves, they're going to go buy it on eBay or Amazon. They're not going to pay more money to a distributor to buy the product. And so it really does undercut, you know, the distributor's ability to have retail sales. And so anyway, that was going on, and I don't know if we will ever know what the real story was. You know, was this Jay Bennett guy in cahoots with the company, or did he go off on his own with this selling on eBay and Amazon? We don't know, and it'll be really interesting to see how much we might be able to learn from this new lawsuit, because some of that might get uncovered. Now, chances are, we've been doing this for almost 8 years, chances are this will be settled out of court and we won't know, you know, what happened with Jay Bennett getting canned, nor the whole deal with the retail sales online. You know, the company denies it and there was a settlement, and typically in a settlement, part of the agreement in a settlement is neither side says anything about what was agreed to. And so it's a mystery. We don't know. And legally, they are bound to not say. And it's kind of frustrating. And that's probably where this is going to end up. But we'll just have to wait and see what happens with this lawsuit as it moves forward. So I'll hand it back to you, Peter, for more comments.
Okay. So Isagenix is a company that's been around for a real long time. When I was part of the Distributor Rights Association, one of their leading distributors, Jimmy the Butcher, was an Isagenix person, and he did Isagenix the right way and took care of his family and probably was somewhere around $50,000 a week in income and maybe even more, maybe even had multiple positions of $50,000 a week. But Jimmy the Butcher was a butcher, and he actually, he was in his 60s or maybe even, I think he was in his 60s, and he was either going to figure out how to retire or decide to do something, and basically did everything and focused on Isagenix, never knew about network marketing, took care of his family, positioned them the right way, worked his ass off, and became a multimillionaire in the world of Isagenix. So that was the good old days. I think Isagenix wound up, and here we go into the direct sales manipulation thing. A lot of companies were trying to figure out how to move product on Amazon. And unfortunately, you can't do that alone. So they have their conspirators. So people that are part of the, hey, you can't tell the field, because people like Jimmy the Butcher is going to get pissed. So we got to do this on the sly, and you need somebody to do it on the sly with. So we know what this happened with Visalis. We know this happened with a lot of other network marketing companies as well. And I am probably going to say Isagenix, although I don't have specific facts, so I don't want to prejudge, I'm violating my own rules. I'm probably going to say they were guilty of trying to do selling Isagenix products on the side through this guy, Jan Bennett. My best guess, allegedly. However, I could put in whatever other wiggle room that I want. So we had a sweetheart deal. And he was probably, you know, who knows what the financial arrangement was, but the bottom line is that's what he had going on. That was not disclosed. All he was making a boatload of friggin' money, because if you are on like a binary or some kind of a compensation plan where there's a lot of breakage, meaning when people don't qualify for commissions, the commissions go up line. One of the benefits of being involved in a company is if there's breakage, meaning people aren't hitting qualifications. Like Scott, we were talking about a little bit earlier. Like what if the guy didn't buy the extra 30, you know, products to be able to hit that bonus level? Where did that money that would have been paid out go it might have wound up going somewhere up in the commission in the upline one way or another. So having said that,
it does in Amway, by the way. Yeah, you're exactly right. That's exactly what happens in Amway. It goes to the next level up. And let me just insert this real quick since we're on that topic. You're not supposed to get any downline bonus from your downline if you don't do your own personal 50 PV or 10 customers in any given month. So it's a monthly thing you have to hit every month in Amway in order to get paid your downline volume bonus. And that rule is routinely ignored. So I'll just say it at that because it happened to me. I know personally that this happens, and I'll hand it back to you, Peter.
So there's always way more than we'll ever know because we're not the ones in the company getting the compensation checks calculated and all those other types of issues as well. So the only thing we can do is speculate a little bit over here. But I think what I'm going to say is correct coming up next. He wasn't fired in a rule that the companies make, which is, by the way, a predatory rule. And when I was president of the Distributor Rights Association and the ANMP, we fought for people to read contracts and not sign with companies that had this practice in place, which is, I'm going to explain this practice. It basically says that every year there's a renewal. And if the company doesn't renew your distributorship, you're shit out of luck. I mean, they don't call it shit out of luck, but the company has the opportunity to either allow you to renew your contract or not. And they don't need a reason. So this is right in the contract, the terms and conditions, the policies, the procedures, all the things that are lots of pages long that nobody ever reads. And what happened to this guy was exactly what we said. They changed the policies and procedures. They got a lawyer. I think Isagenix was either being sold or something like that. So the new owners came in and they had the lawyers change the policies and procedures. And you know what that looks like. That's usually like, okay, you're getting ready to go log into your back office. And it says, we've changed stuff. And in order to go see your back office, you have to agree to the new policies and procedures. And most people don't read, so they just click. So they click on it, and then which means they agree to it. And what this guy Jan did was he agreed to the new policy and procedure, which was the company has the right to offer you to renew your contract or not. And they didn't. And that meant he wasn't really fired. His contract just wasn't renewed, which meant the company keeps the commission. And this guy's like, well, wait a minute. You can't do that to me. So he goes to the judge and he says, look at what they did. And then Isagenix says, well, wait a minute. This guy's no angel here. We've had a whole bunch of other things going on with this Amazon thing and the blah, 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 blah. So he would have been fired anyway. And whatever the story is something worth at least introducing. Number one, a lot of companies are trying to figure out how do we move product and how do we compete with Amazon? So that's legit. And some of them do it the right way and most of them do it the wrong way. That's number one. Number two, do you own your own business? And this is one of the things that the anti-Emmers don't understand. They think, you know, because it's not a brick-and-mortar store, you don't own a business. A distributorship is a business. You can buy it. You can sell it. It's even in those terms and procedures. So for all those idiotic anti-MLMers that say MLM is not a business, you're retarded, you're stupid, like talk to a lawyer. Any lawyer will tell you it's a business. You can buy it and sell it. Now, how you can buy it or sell it is somewhat suspect because sometimes the MLM companies say we want the right of first refusal to say you can't sell it to this guy, and that could be either good or bad. But the reality is that one of the things that none of the MLMers or the anti-MLMers ever talk about is the idea that there's this little hidden clause in many contracts that says, you know, you have to renew your distributorship. And if the company doesn't allow you to renew your distributorship, you're screwed. So with this guy Jan, that's what they did with him. So he's screwed. So there's that story. There's another one about Prove It we can talk about a little bit later on. But, you know, so then the question is, do you really own your business? And here's what I'll say. So I've never seen an MLM company not renew a distributorship that was clean, meaning the people were building it the right way. They weren't doing things the wrong way. They weren't making income claims. They weren't doing medical claims. They weren't a problem child. I mean, I've never seen, so never is a big word, like never means zero. Zero exists, zero situations where a company pulled the rug out of a distributor who was clean. I've seen it used lots of times to pull the rug out from a distributor that was a problem or dirty. So it's kind of like one of those clauses that you put in there that says we could fire you for any friggin' reason, as many employment contracts have, by the way. They can fire you with or without cause. And a lot of people sign those things. So if you're an employee, like there's stupid comments that I read sometimes on anti-MLM things. I'm an employee, and I make $90,000 a year, and I get vacations, and I have a secure job. And, you know, so what's wrong about that? I'm like, well, did you read your contract, you fucking idiot? You know, you can probably be fired for cause or no cause on a whim. So if a company changes ownership, they want to go private, they want to go public, they want to downsize, they can just fire your ass, you stupid bastard. You don't even realize that you didn't even read your own contract. So that clause is in there for employees, non-employees, independent contractors. It could be in there for a franchisee. So it's not just MLM. It's all over the place as well. And I think that's where they pulled the rug on this guy, Jan, and where they'll win. So they'll win because it's right there. It's right there. He clicked on it. He agreed to it. And all the rest is just going to be bantering back and forth and probably a little bit of extortion of him wanting to blow the whistle on these things. And this is really sad or not, because if he was dirty, like if he was dirty and people are using him for promotional purposes, and this is why you should be in MLM because of this guy, and I don't know anything about this guy, so I'm telling you straight up front, I don't know anything about this guy. Or the example or how they might have used him. But if he was used under those false pretenses because they kind of manipulated the compensation plan to make him look good and he's kicking back or doing whatever, he's getting special things, those are the downsides of direct sales, MLM, or maybe even, you know, being the president of the United States, you know, kickbacks from your son, you know, all that other shit. This happens all over the place. So it could happen all over the place. And MLM is not exclusive for scams. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, an example was our guest last week. You know, he was selling pressurized gases, and there was a change in ownership, and he was gone. That was not an MLM. That's just business. That happens. And a lot of states, you know, it's called a right to work, which actually the meaning of it is sort of the opposite. You can be fired in a right to work state for a reason or no reason at all. Now, I do think that there's a couple interesting things with this Jay Bennett and Isagenics is that apparently this, you know, Amazon eBay deal was like 3 years ago. So, you know, why did they wait this long to change the deal and get rid of the guy? That's kind of suspicious. But they must have done the calculation that even if he took everybody in his downline with him, they would still be better off than if they kept him. You know, that's, I assume that's the calculation they made when they got rid of him.
I think the company's being sold. So for all of those reasons too, you know, when you're selling a company, they start looking at the books, and that could be one of the reasons as well.
Right. Yeah, maybe the new owner said, this guy's too much baggage, and we just need to get rid of him, no matter what the cost, you know, of his downline disappearing, you know, to the company, whatever that cost is, it's worth it. I have to assume they made a business decision here. Now, it's interesting, too, because Amway back, I think it was either late 1990s or early 2000s, they had a rule change where they forced everybody to go into arbitration if there was a disagreement. And one of the distributors actually went to court and said, I never agreed to that. And also the argument was, that's unfair that I put so much time and effort and money into something that I've been living off of for all these years, and all of a sudden you can just change the rules willy-nilly without it, you know, informing me or getting my input or anything. You just change them, and all of a sudden I'm in violation of this new rule. That's just unfair. And that was actually taken to court. And the court actually found in favor of the former Amway distributor, and Amway had to change their rules such that they would not unilaterally change a rule. They would actually be forced to get the input from the they call it the IBO AI, Independent Business Owner Association International, which is actually made up of all the tool scam artists. So it's almost like the fox guarding the hen house as far as the real protection to the IBOs. But at least they put something in place to where Amway couldn't just go change whatever rule they wanted and force these people into non-compliance, basically. To me, it is very unfair to be able to change the rules like that after someone's put in years and years and years of effort, and all of a sudden the company can unilaterally just change something, and then all of a sudden it puts you in a really bad position, you know, particularly financially. So we'll see where this goes. It'll be interesting as this lawsuit saga it goes on, but we're talking, you know, months and years here. We're not talking next week. So we'll see what happens. Anything more on that one? I'll move on.
Well, the messed up part is for and the guy who lost his income unexpectedly, because most of the times there's victims there that are unspoken about. Like, for instance, the guy could be slimy in a business, but he's got a wife and he's got kids and they have schools and they have cars and they have lifestyles. And then now all of a sudden, you know, slime bag, and I'm not saying that that's the situation with this guy, but the reality is that when you have your income swept from under you like that, and it, you know, instantly for no real reason without being able to make any kind of adjustment, that really is hard on the family. So some people might say, well, I don't care because, you know, the guy's a slime ball. You know, his wife should have known, his kids should have known, you know, the maid should have known, or, you know, the school should have known, or the dog should have known, and whatever. But this does really create a ripple effect hardship on a lot of different people. And that's the hard part about this, which is really just a long-term effect of very weak management. We used to say, you know, I always say there's no strength in weakness. So some people are stupid enough they can't figure that out. The problem with this is when you allow weakness, so all this compensation plan manipulation, all this trying to sell stuff on Amazon without your people knowing about it, that's a weakness. If you were strong in sales, you would have strong recruiting, you'd have strong sales, you wouldn't have these problems. You know, strength sales fixes everything, or lots of things, maybe not everything, but strong sales fixes everything. It's when you have this weakness where there's victims, and it's sad when there's family members that are affected by this, and that's just a little bit of a soft spot for me, saying, you know what, that just sucks, that somebody should have been stronger months or years before and stopped this practice, and unfortunately now there's some innocent victims, but that's life, I suppose. Back to you, Scott.
Yeah, and there's ripples across the company probably too. You know, everybody else kind of has their head up and looking around like, okay, who's next? What's next? And it really decreases the confidence in the company. So again, you know, this had to be a calculated decision, or there's a bunch of idiots at corporate. It could be either one or a little bit of both, you know, to where they made this decision. And we'll see where it pans out, you know, in the future as far as Isagenix, and do they grow from this or do they shrink? Because that ultimately is what the corporation is responsible for, is growth of the company. and it'll be interesting to see where it goes. Okay, so the next one here is also June 23rd, 2023. The headline is CFO allegedly confirmed Family First Life is a Ponzi scheme. So I read this article, and Peter, I thought it was a big nothing burger. I thought it was a real stretch to, you know, make this sort of statement that the and they actually couldn't even find a CFO with this company. Now, whether they used to have one or not, that's also unknown, apparently, at least to Oz. I would expect any company like this would have a CFO. So it's kind of a weird story that, you know, there's not a name behind this, and there's no current CFO that could be found on the company's website. So that doesn't necessarily mean there isn't one.
Yeah, if you read through the story is all about distributors getting screwed and franchisees fucking around with compensation plans and all of this sort of stuff. This is, remember he said a little bit earlier, I was going to tie this into the conversation I was having a little bit earlier. This is all about compensation plan manipulation. This was all about screwing around with salespeople. This had everything to do with them trying to sell the company or whatever, or franchise or whatever, and kind of manipulating. Let's call it just basic fraud. This was a fraud issue, not a Ponzi scheme issue. So I have no idea what the CFO was talking about. This is just like you guys are a bunch of people that just are screwing each other, which is, by the way, anytime there's a lot of money at stake with like these insurance companies where there's big payouts, you know, and there's renewals, stuff like that. I mean, we're talking about real money. So if you kind of move a sale from this guy over here or this guy over there, you push a whole bunch of over here so you can make that one location look a little bit better so you can sell the company. That's fraud. That's not Ponzi. So I have no idea where they were talking about it because they mislabeled this. So I don't know what you're fucking doing in Canada, but those guys don't know how to even – they can't even get that right. So that's the part that I read about that article. This is just a whole bunch of idiots playing stupid games on manipulation. So this is business fraud.
Yeah, and there does seem to be more of this going on, right? We covered, what, two or three stories already tonight in this sort of genre. And I think part of what's going on here is, you know, when we had COVID, a lot of the companies grew by quite a bit because of COVID. You know, no one could leave their home. And so you could do, you know, these kinds of remote meetings and sales and everything like that. And then once we got over COVID, it went down, and I think it may have gone down more than it went up initially. And so these companies are in a really bad financial position at this point because, you know, when they went up in volume at the beginning of COVID, they probably had to ramp up all of their infrastructure. And now that they're back smaller again, they're struggling with that. They're struggling with their business shrinking. And I think a lot of them are just trying to, you know, reshuffle the deck, you know, change the compensation plans so that they don't give out as much money and they can, you know, pay their bills and everything. And it's really just, you know, causing more problems in a lot of cases than it's solving. But they are trying to solve it by manipulating things like getting rid of people and changing compensation plans so they're not as favorable and all these different things that, you know, are not favorable to the distributors. It's only favorable to the company. I think there's a lot of, you know, infighting here between the companies and the distributors based on the hiccup that COVID provided. So that's kind of my theory.
Yep, and the reason why you don't have a CFO is because the CFO is kind of like an accountant. So I can't have an accountant in my business if I'm juggling the books and moving stuff all over the place and whatever. Of course I don't have a CFO. Like, who would expect to have a CFO? No respectable CFO would sign off on those things. So, you know, that's a sign. But like I said, it's probably more fraud than Ponzi. I have no idea where they get Ponzi from. Because Ponzi is what? New people coming in to pay off the promises from the old people? And where's that part in this story? I just didn't see it. Now, by the way, I'm going to throw in a little bit of a thing. There's a very popular podcaster, PBD, Patrick Bet David, who ran an insurance company, which was kind of like a spinoff of a lot of insurance companies called People Helping People, PHP. And he sold PHP about a year and a half ago. So he never talked about it when he was doing his podcast. I also own an insurance company, which is an MLM. He talked about insurance every once in a while, but he ran a really big organization, and he sold out. And I think Patrick Bet-David was a smart cookie for selling out when he did because of all the regulations that some of the things were going on. So I think he just – I don't think he sold out for all of the right reasons. I think he sold out because he saw the writing on the wall. He's a smart guy and said, I'm going to get the fuck out of here before this whole thing collapses. And now he's in the podcasting business, and he sold out and for multiple hundreds of millions of dollars. So, and the company's still up and running, and he's a sharp dude. And he just, it's just for playful sakes, he just interviewed Alex Jones, and he's interviewed, you know, lots of other interesting people as well. And he's on the cutting edge of doing a whole bunch of stuff as well. So he's just interviewed Robert F. Kennedy. Who else is he? He always introduces Andrew Tate. Introduces or interviews a lot of different people as well, but that's a little bit about the backstory of MLM insurance companies and a little bit on the writing on the wall. So he sold out. Now, what we don't know is the terms and conditions. Did he get a big fat check, or did he get terms? Like, you know, X amount of money every year based on these businesses not going down. That we'll never know, but he's okay. The bottom line is he is okay financially. He did an amazing thing of building a very big company in the insurance and MLM world, and he's out. He checked out. He did it the right way. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, there's a common phrase out there that instead of PHP being people helping people, it's people helping Patrick, which is his first name. And we don't know. I mean, you know, people can make whatever accusations they want, but, you know, I don't know. And so I'm not going to come to an assumptive conclusion based on no information. I don't know.
He built a huge company, So with, I don't know, probably tens of thousands of distributors, and he built it. So my hat's off to him. Now, yeah, you know, in direct sales, you got stuff happening. You know, you always have stuff happening. So back to you.
Yeah. Yeah, to expect perfection, yeah. And I think he probably did see some writing on the wall. I think maybe, and again, this is just pure conjecture, maybe they were doing some of the same things that, and we had a guest on here a couple of years ago with another insurance company where she said they kept pushing the wrong product on people. And that's the accusation up in Canada against another insurance company. And so maybe he saw the writing on the wall that, hey, we're doing that too. I got to get out of here. You know, I don't want to be in charge when the axe comes down. So I'm going to get out of here, go do my podcast thing. And he does have a lot of really interesting guests. I mean, you know, very well-known people. Some people that are not well-known that really are interesting as far as what they know and what they bring to the table. So it's I don't watch it a whole lot. I, you know, just don't have time to watch all of his guests and everything. But he does have quite a variety and very interesting guests and very interesting conversations. It's something that, you know, if you want real information versus anti-MLM HUN garbage information, I would definitely, you know, check that out because it's a lot better than like the Illuminati drama. I mean, you know, what can you get out of that? But that's what people gravitate towards, right? It's like moths going towards a light. They just are attracted to garbage. And that's why they have garbage coming out of their brains and their mouths and everything. It's just, you know, it's what you get when you don't think. So anyway, so I guess the next story here is, because we're getting close to our end here, Peter.
One of the good things about Patrick Bet-David and a lot of the people that they interview is that these are people that are successful financially. So take financial advice from people that aren't broke. That's one of the things I've always learned. Like, how in the world can you take financial advice from people that are broke? So if you've never made it, like, how in the world can you give financial advice? So Patrick Bet-David does a really good job. Self-made. He immigrated from Iran, built a huge business, very driven person. Now he's building a multimedia empire with a whole bunch of other great people. And he interviewed Alex Jones just a couple of days ago, I think, or just recently. So a big fan of Alex Jones and the things that he stands for as well. So I just figured I'd throw that in there just for fun. So anyway, so if you're broke, you probably can't give financial advice. So Patrick Bet-David does a good job. Built a big company, sold it out, and he talks about finances. So back to you, Scott.
Yep. I totally agree with you. Why would you get your advice from someone who's never done anything? It's crazy. But hey, if you're stupid, do it, you know, because it just follows the pattern. Yeah, if you're stupid, do it, because that's why you're stupid. Let's see here. So the next story is June 23rd again, 2023. And the headline is FBI bumps Ruja Ignatius' arrest bounty to $250,000. So $250,000. I think it was $100,000 before, or the original was $100,000. This is a woman that, you know, founded OneCoin and disappeared, I think, in 2017. It's still out there. I mean, it's not as big, I don't think, as it was, but it's still alive. And you know, I know you made a prediction, and I tended to agree with it. I think it was the end of 2017. You know, the prediction was this company will no longer exist. Well, now that's 6 years ago. So, and by the way, they have arrested and convicted some people, not her, of course. She's still gone. We don't know. She could be, you know, buried in a block of cement by some Russian mafia guy. She could be in Dubai. You know, we don't know. She's just disappeared. And they just bumped up the award in order to get someone to say, hey, that's a lot of money. I could use that money because I know where she is. So we'll see what happens. That's another OneCoin story. That's probably the most talked about MLM on this show over the years, you know, by the number of mentions, because when they were hot, I mean, we had sometimes four, five, six stories during 1 week with OneCoin updates, you know, separate stories. It was amazing how many stories, updates came out from OneCoin over the years. So anything more on that one?
No, it's just really sad. You know, when you see the thing like the FBI bumps up this thing for Ruja, we were talking about OneCoin when it was live. If the FBI was listening in and they wanted to go get OneCoin, they could have gotten her when we and lots of other people were talking about it as well and stopped it in its tracks and prevented a lot of people from losing a lot of money and being hurt and all those other types of things. So this is just kind of like in your face. I mean, like, oh my God, it's like, oh, we're going to raise the rewards for anybody that finds a sub near the Titanic by $1 million. You know, you say, what the fuck? I mean, it's gone. It's gone. It's so many days late. Why are you doing this? This is like insulting. Like this, you should have stopped the sub from going down originally. You knew it was something that was like the sub that went down. It's being powered by Nintendo remote controls. I mean, they're buying their shit over at Home Depot to go down, you know, 2 miles down. What the hell is wrong with you people? But that's just the frustration that we have with the FTC, the FBI, all those other types of things. I look at this as just being like, are you kidding me? Are you, like, really, seriously, how stupid do you think we are? If you really wanted to stop these things, you would have done it when they were hot. And don't tell us you don't know. Like, really, if you are that, then you're overpaid idiots. But I don't think that's the case. I think there's other reasons why they let these things go the way they do. Some of them may have to do with Joe Biden.
Yeah, I look at it mainly as incompetence. I know a lot of people think there's payoffs, and maybe there are, but I just see incompetence. You know, there was another recent example of that, and I can't remember the guy's name, but there was a guy that was supposed to be extradited to the U.S. He was being held by French authorities. He's from Luxembourg, which was right next door to where he was under house arrest, and just as they announced that the extradition had been approved, he disappears. You know,
right.
Why the French didn't go in and put him into custody before they announced that he was going to be extradited, it's just, to me, it's incompetence. Now, maybe somebody was paid off. I'm not discounting that. But, you know, anytime you can connect government and incompetence, that's probably a good explanation because they're just incompetent. You know, the FTC knows about the lack of retail sales. Just look at the products that the MLMs offer that are overpriced, and it's easy to come to a conclusion that those are probably not being sold to customers. Those are probably being consumed by distributors because it's too much trouble to teach somebody like you were able to do with the vacuum cleaners how to describe the benefits of something. It's much easier to say, hey, you want to get filthy rich? Go buy some of this stuff and find some other people that also want to get filthy rich and have them buy some of the stuff. It's just ridiculous, you know, that the FTC pretends that this is a complicated scenario, and it's just simple. It's so simple. And here we are, you know, 8 years into this show on a weekly basis complaining about the same things that are so obvious to us, and yet, you know, it's been pretty much zero coming out of the FTC, you know, maybe one or two companies a year, but nowhere near what needs to happen. So anyway, that's my rant for the night. Peter, I'll let you close it out. I think we're at the top of the hour here.
We are. And then you hear the bullshit that these departments are underfunded. Well, then use some of the fucking money you're sending over to the Ukraine. Like, peel off a couple of those billions and freaking fund the right things. But that's a story that would mean, oh, you mean you really want to help the people you're working with? That's not government. So that's another whole conversation. But we are here on Building Fortunes Radio, going to sign off with Scott Johnson. Scott, tell people how to find your website one more time.
Yeah, on my Facebook page, I've got the three website links, the YouTube, the link to this radio show, my email. It's all at facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson. That's ScottTexJohnson, all one word. And Peter, another good week, and we'll see you next Saturday. I'm pretty sure we have someone on the show next week as a guest. I'll be talking with her tomorrow to come on. She was in Amway for 14 years, which puts her back to around 2009, which is the year that I was terminated by Amway, thankfully, and she was in for 14 years and recently quit. So I think it's our longest, guest that was in the longest in Amway to be on the show, and also very recent. Those two things together, it should be a fantastic show, and I'm really looking forward to that. So thanks again, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.